Why not Bez? Why not Bez? Why not Bez? And MotoGP says goodbye to its favourite Portuguese son. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. I still can't get over that funky-ass pre-race ceremony. It was like watching something out of Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Hey, everybody. I'm Dre Harrison. Welcome to episode 629 of Motorsport 101. I'm glad you're back with us for our normally slotted podcast on MotoGP. And, well, I could say we had an entertaining Portuguese Grand Prix, but then I'd be lying to you if I'm being completely honest. The thing is, it was so dull that RJ decided to fly out to Indianapolis for an IMSA test, and it's just me and Mr. Cameron Buckley in my esteemed company. Hello, Cameron. How's it going?
It's going. Captain. Well, man, what a week. Captain, it's Wednesday. That is my week thus far. Which is to say, I'm still having a better week than Pecco Bagnaia.
You've got to have higher standards than that, Cams, and have a happy life, you know.
I used to. That's the problem.
You used to, and then Pecco Bagnaia started tucking the front, and it all went downhill from there. It's like we're back in 2019 again.
Oh, God. Just roll it back like 12 years, like taking an arrow to the knee.
Oh, God, that is a meme I've not heard in a while. Good Lord. Portuguese Grand Prix. Now, I'm going to be honest with you guys on this one. We normally have a pretty tightly edited script to go into these podcasts, so we have a rough idea of what we're doing. We don't on this occasion. We're going to totally wing this one.
Just about the only way we're going to get any length out of this race, given we had a very entertaining sprint, and then perhaps the dullest Grand Prix we'll watch this year. On four wheels.
It's wild because even when MotoGP has a good race weekend, it's normally the other way round. Normally the sprint sucks, but then the Grand Prix something funky happens and it ends up actually being good. This was the opposite. I'd argue this was the best sprint MotoGP has ever had. It's certainly in the top three, I would say. It was a fantastic sprint race. Grand Prix, complete damp squib. It's like, I think I know how that happened, but we'll talk about that a little bit on the show itself. A very weird weekend where Alex Marquez ultimately took the sprint race, but Marco Bezzecchi wins a Grand Prix for the first time since May. That feels weird to say that Bez, who has been excellent pretty much all season long, has won a Grand Prix for the first time in 6 months.
It doesn't feel real. Not when he's been as competitive as he has been.
Yeah, like, as a guy that's been watching all year, like I had a sudden epiphany on our Discord when we were streaming the race and watching, and I was like, wait, this is only his second win this year? Like, and even the first one was a gift from Quartararo, really, in all honesty. I think Fabio wins Silverstone at a canter if it wasn't for the rear ride height device failure that we know about. So yeah, we'll talk a little bit about Bez, his dominance of that race, where that sits in this weird sort of garbage time vibe that MotoGP is in right now, with just one round to go till the end of the season. Some injury update news. We've got Pol Espargaró being back in town. MotoGP says goodbye to Miguel Oliveira in a strangely emotional sort of pre-race ceremony we'll get to as well, which I must admit I did not see coming in real time. I never thought MotoGP would take a page out of Formula One's pomp and pageantry, but next thing you know, you get a giant pirate ship on the track 20 minutes before the race starts. As you do. A little bit of Moto 2 as well, because that title is now pretty much all but wrapped up. We'll talk about how and why a little bit later on as well. But places you can find us in the meantime, real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. If you can catch all of our video highlights of the show on either YouTube there, Instagram, Motorsport101Pod, or our TikTok account, M101_podcast. You can check us out on any of those if you want some extra highlights of the show, bonus clips, some monologues from yours truly. They're all over there. If you want to follow us on our other places on social media, you can. Facebook.com/Motorsport101, Twitter at Motorsport_101, personal Blue Skies, Dre Harrison, and CBuckley917.bsky.social. You've also got our websites where you can get some written reviews of both this and Formula One's Brazilian Grand Prix Mega Weekend. I was really happy with that DR as it goes. You can check that out on our website, motorsport101.com/blog. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason is doing so right now. And he's very promptly messaged me to tell you all that the ballots for the Motorsport 101 Awards will open up on November the 14th. So on Friday, so the day after this will go out. Keep your eyes peeled on our social media, and you can vote for the Motorsport 101 Awards, which will unveil right around Christmas time, after the Formula One season is over and we get our usual season reviews out of the way and all that fun stuff. You'll be able to vote on that. So stay tuned, stick around on our social media. We'll give it the old plug here and there. So you'd have a month to vote on that until December the 14th, the week after Abu Dhabi ends. So yeah, check that out on social media on Friday, November the 14th. Cool. Without further ado, let's get into our review of the Portuguese Grand Prix. Kind of, sorta, without a script. Yada, yada, yada. Again, normally I'd have a well-written paragraph to sum up how the race went on this occasion, but honestly, you probably wouldn't need to on this occasion. The Grand Prix itself, Bez 1 lights the flag. That's it.
Leads down to 1, is never seen again.
Yeah, pretty much. Gap peaked at about 4 seconds, came down a bit to about 2.5 by the time the race was over. Bez was really just winding it down by the end of the race. Didn't matter, was never under any kind of threat. Acosta did make a late charge at Alex Marquez, got to within about 0.7, 0.6 or so on the final lap, but never really had the legs to beat Alex at the end. Similar story in the sprint, really, as well, but we kind of got to talk about that sprint first, Cam. Alex Marquez winning quite possibly the greatest MotoGP sprint race we've ever had. They beat the piss out of each other.
You know, if Pedro Acosta wasn't going to win that one, I don't think... Maybe he just doesn't. Maybe he just doesn't ever score maximum points in a point scoring session. What more does he have to do?
I was sitting there wondering that very question myself as you're watching it in real time. I'm going, holy shit. He's riding that like it's the final lap of a Grand Prix and he's suddenly Valentino Rossi, where he's going to block pass everywhere he can to try and get back in front. There was passes at turn 3 at the right-hand hairpin at the bottom of the track. There was dive bombs into turn 5, which is incredibly brave to send it there. Well, you know, downhill, blind apex, lots of camber, one of the nastiest corners on the calendar. So easy to drop it there. And Pedro had no problem just sticking Alex Marquez up. And Alex was like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, Alex always had an answer. But I mean, those two were never more than 3 or 4 tenths apart during that fight for much of that sprint. Just beating the shit out of each other while Bez was watching at minimum safe distance.
Bez was like, I want none of this. It's like you two
Vegeta
can have
Vegeta watching Goku and Frieza have fisticuffs.
Just like, I want none of this smoke. I was like, I will take this third place. Please and thank you. Because the thing is, right, is that Alex was just starting to put away with about 3 to go. And then all of a sudden, we were sitting there thinking, classic KTM, tires have gone, Pedro can't stay with him. Then 2 laps to go, it's like, shit, Pedro's back. He was like, I will not go down quietly. And he's back.
Seeing a little bit of almost a trend. We saw this in the Grand Prix the next day. It's almost like Acosta's kind of cracked a code with the KTM to back off a couple laps, let the tires, you know, kind of come back into their window and then take another crack at it. Very, very Formula One, like, in a terrible way, backing out of the dirty air zone to just compose yourself and compose your tires a little bit to go back after someone. Yet another sprint where Alex Marquez was just class.
Didn't put a foot wrong. You know, it was he had to deal with monumental pressure to deal with Acosta, who you could tell by the way he's riding badly wants that first win. Even if whether it's a sprint or a Grand Prix, it doesn't matter. Pedro will throw that KTM in there like his life depends on it. And Alex was like, I'm just gonna get you into turn one again. Doesn't bother me in the slightest. We'll do this again.
Get ready to learn decimodromic valves, buddy, into turn one every time.
And it's not like that KTM is slow in a straight line either. I saw some slip streams. Like, Acosta was hitting 350 down that main straight. Like, 280
miles. That ain't a long straight either. In the grand scheme of MotoGP, it's not that long. And we were routinely seeing well north of 200, even from the Yamahas. It's just everyone else is faster.
The Yamahas are giving up 5 miles an hour in those speed traps. It's eight kph. Like Fabio was bottom of the speed traps. But then on the other end, you've got when Alex Marquez or Acosta was in the 15, they were hitting like 348, 350 kilometers an hour. That's 218 mph, which is just, that's not a long straight. I mean, and you brake early because obviously it runs downhill on the apex to turn run. So you're braking earlier than you normally would.
Yeah,
so
you're braking over a crest.
Yeah, like it's one of the trickiest braking points on the entire calendar because it's so easy to run wide there. If you miss your mark, you've had it on that track. You will go wide. There is no, like, that corner holds no mercy. It's ease off the brake or you're going down. It's that simple. But Alex, every time Pedro launched an attack and was going into the back straight in front, Alex was like, okay, I'm just going to get you into turn one again. I've got my braking point down with the slipstream. I'm just going to pass you here again, and I'm going to let you take the risk if you want to try and pass me.
Right.
Alex just handled it. He handled business, and I love seeing that man prove his doubt was wrong. That's his fifth win of the year if you include sprints and Grand Prix. He's just having a fantastic year. It was my brother that pointed it out. He's going to have the fourth highest MotoGP points total of all time this year, and he's still 100 points behind his brother, who's not raced since Indonesia.
I don't know, man. He's been taking big chunks out of Mark lately. Is Mark washed?
Well, not washed enough, because at least Alex very kindly qualified in fifth so that Mark gets to BMW.
I'm sure he'll take him for... He'll take him for rides in the backseat.
Shop around. Hey,
Alec, you can have your head out the window. No, it is... that's a Nigel. Nigel, get out of here.
Cam's dog is in the room. Briefly.
Yes. Yes, complaining about BMW styling. I've taught them well.
No, Dad, I don't like the beaver.
Hey, yo.
I didn't even mean it like that. Oh my god.
All of this is getting cut out. All of this goes into the blooper reel at the end of the season.
Oh, it absolutely stays in. Don't you worry about that.
Oh my. Yeah, like back on track with Alex Marquez. Again, the notion that the little brother wouldn't want to run the big brother down is the single most insane thing ever said by a sports journalist. Signed someone who made it a point to wipe every Mario Kart 64 time trial off of our cartridge. My brother will own no fast times.
No, it's either I have the record or no one shall have it. The AI will keep this.
Oh, no, I went in there and I beat them all myself.
This sounds like something that would be in a summon insult video. it's ridiculous. Yeah,
I'm not that good at Mario Kart 64.
No, but geez, it was a ridiculous performance from Alex. And like I said, at least now with Mark winning the BMW, at least he now gets the bragging rights on the inevitable family double date.
What, as opposed to all the championships and the fame and the glory and the factory ride?
Oh yeah, the new car takes it over the top, definitely. Like
not the signed Marquez championship helmet, which you can buy if you hate money, and have lots of it to get rid of.
5,600 smeckles.
Worth every penny.
It's a beautiful helmet, but I'm like, I'm not sure it's worth a mortgage payment. Or five.
Well, you know, if you can afford that, then I'm sure you can afford the MM93 edition Panigale V2.
Yes, with the all red testing 93 livery on it from the end of last year.
What, was Ducati not going to milk this? Of course they are.
They have Marc Marquez on their roster. You bleed that man for every branding exercise you can think of. That's how you do it. I mean, the counter to that was just the Grand Prix. Complete opposite. Bez takes the whole shot, and he's not seen again. Like that was it. Race was over. You know what it was? It was like watching prime Jorge Lorenzo in like the early 2010s, where once he got the whole shot on a track he likes, it's over. It's just like, I'm just gonna, he's out there.
He's got a second gap. He's smooth. He's in the rhythm. He gone. Alex stayed with him for a few laps, but then once you get into that second phase of the race, Bez just started ripping time out of him and everybody.
Yeah, it was 4 or 5 tenths a lap. It was just, gap was 0.8, then it's 1.2, then it's 1.7, then it's 2+, then it's 2+ seconds. At that point, it's done. Like that middle phase of the race, once the tire was past its best, and you're in that second phase where it's starting to wind down, and now you've got to figure out what your rhythm is going to be. Bez was gone. He was completely gone, and the front three were pretty spread out by that point. As we mentioned it before, Acosta came back at the end a little bit, saving some tire for the final 4 or 5 laps, but he gave himself a bit too much to do on that one. And, you know, he tried, it was within 0.6 at the end of the race, but Alex had just enough to hold on. I mean, it's Portimao. It is a tire shredder. The fronts were completely gone by the end of that race. They were shredded. This is one of the few races where we had the hard front, pretty much universal.
You needed it. You couldn't use anything else.
No. Everything else was completely gashed. Only one man didn't run a hard front in the race, and that was Alex Rins. And I'm like, you silly man.
And he suffered for it.
I would say suffering from success, but no, it's Alex Rins. So that is not what's happening here.
Not this year.
No.
And again, Alex was able to cut into Bezzecchi a little bit, basically by virtue of being pushed up towards him by Acosta, because it looked like Alex had completely just, the front two had wound off the throttle and were easing it home. And suddenly Acosta's taking 7/8 tenths out of Alex a lap.
Yeah.
Couldn't quite get there in time.
Yeah, his butt. Go on.
There was a man running in fourth place for much of this event.
Oh.
And then he very suddenly wasn't.
I'm sick and tired of talking about him. I'm so glad that this championship finishes this weekend, so I don't have to talk about him after the season review is done until early next year, because Pecco Bagnaia was running a comfortable fourth and he crashes at turn 9. And I'm just like, what are we doing here? Same story. He tried to push when he was in P4 and the front just goes. Completely
washed. I'm so over it. 4 consecutive Grand Prix DNFs. You know, the last time he didn't DNF, he had a perfect weekend. There needs to be some kind of middle ground between grand slamming a whole weekend and crashing. There has to be.
Well, if he just takes a comfortable fourth, that probably
nothing
is your middle ground.
There's nothing wrong with a fourth. Not this year.
It's not a bad day. You know, it's 13 guilt-free points. And down he went. It's the first time since 2019 he's failed to finish 4 Grand Prix in a row. That was his rookie year in MotoGP when he was still with Pramac, and he was looking ropey that first season.
He was a little on the rare side of cooked the first 2 years. He got better. And even then, the sprint wasn't bad.
No.
The sprint wasn't too bad up until the end of the race when he makes a mistake at the final turn, gets beat, and then gets beaten over the line by Johann Zarco because he wheelies. Johann Zarco, who hates this current iteration of the Honda, even though it is a better bike in most ways compared to its direct, the previous version. I'm so sick of this. He was outpointed on Sunday by Nicolò Bulaga.
That is something that's worth talking about, because Nicolò Bulaga did make his Grand Prix debut this weekend, filling in for Marc Marquez. He'll be doing so again at Valencia this weekend. It was declared last week that he'll be taking the testing duties full-time as well next year on the GP26. Very solid first weekend from Nicolò Bulaga. Like, you really, given that he had a private test beforehand, but he actually apparently only got 30 laps in because it rained the second half of the test, so the rest of it got rained off. So he's only had 30 laps on a GP bike, and he took it to Portimao and was competitive. Like, he was genuinely competitive. He was on track to maybe qualify top 15. He was 17th in the end. His final qualifying lap, he ran wide when he was improving. He brought the bike home. Well, I didn't say that in the sprint. Unfortunately, he crashed in the sprint. It was a bit of a nasty front tuck into turn 13. But Grand Prix-wise, got a point. Solid P15. Followed Miguel Oliveira home. Can't really ask for much more than that, Cam.
No, I mean, I'm sure the first time he threshold braked on that Michelin front, he went, what the hell is this? but he got visibly more comfortable and faster with the bike pretty much all the way through the weekend, which is all you can really ask.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, got to the point where he was able to put a pass on a couple of people. He didn't look bad. And... I mean, Davide Tardozzi, noted founder of insane Davide Tardozzi bullshit, was glowing about him at the end of the weekend.
Said, holy hell, this boy's fast.
I feel like we could tell that. We've been able to tell that in World Superbike for a little bit.
We talked about this before we actually hit the record button, that Nicolò Bulaga arguably should have won this year's World Superbike title. He was every bit as good as Toprak was this year. Despite the let the win streak fool you in the middle of the year, Bulaga was right there with him the whole way and was very unlucky not to win the title. A couple of real heavy point losses that were not his fault in Assen was probably where the damage was truly done. He didn't win as many as Toprak was, but was arguably every bit as consistent. He should have won the title.
In a class of their own pretty much from the drop of the green flag this year. And I mean, we thought it was going to be a bit of a Bulaga, run over session. And then Toprak decided that wasn't going to happen from about the second weekend of the season onward.
Yeah, pretty much. And so look, if you watch WSBK, you've probably known for the last couple of years that Bulaga is damn quick. He is so much better than what he was in Moto2 a few years ago when he was middle of the pack there and didn't really stand out. And he went to Worlds and has become one of the best superbike riders in the world. And he's going to be heavy favorite to win next year's championship with a brand new Panigale underneath him as well. So
we might see a perfect season for a manufacturer over there. I'm going to be real with you.
When your teammate is Ike Lecuona, who is a good WSBK rider, but arguably not an elite one, and who's your main competition going to be? Miguel Oliveira riding a superbike for the first time on the BMW.
Good luck with that.
Bulaga might win 30 races next year. That's not an exaggeration. Like, Bulaga is going to kick ass. I have no doubt about it. Very solid first weekend in MotoGP. Look, if it's a testing role, your main aim is bring the bike home. If you're competitive, that's a bonus. And he was. Walk in there and basically be on par with the backmarkers is already a very solid achievement. If he wipes the floor with WSBK next year, it would not surprise me if he's in contention for a MotoGP seat. If you're VR46, why not? If you're fed up of Morbidelli, like, for example, you know, why not give Rudiger a go?
Yeah, I think the next year's silly season is going to be really explosive with all of the musical chairs that we will be having, and that's beyond just Ducati. That is throughout, you know, every manufacturer next year. I'm afraid he might get lost in the shuffle a little bit. You know, the race for Acosta, the race for Quartararo if he gets fed up with Yamaha.
Maybe Martin.
Maybe Martin. I think Martin would be nuts to leave Aprilia. But I think
so too, but...
I mean, he tried. He did his damnedest this year to try.
Did anybody think he was going to try and walk away this year? I mean, shit.
But yeah, I think if you can't get one of those two, if you're VR46, you have nothing to lose by throwing Bulaga on a bike and seeing how it goes, especially when we're going to be getting the Pirelli tires, which if they're anything like their Superbike counterpart, and these bikes are going to be a little bit more like their Superbike counterparts with the loss of the ride height device, with the loss of some of the aero, could suit him well. So, I mean, pretty much same point of view I have with Toprak going into the next regulations.
Yeah, like, Maddox, he wrote a piece with Fabio Stratodarchi, the new tech chief at Aprilia, saying he reckons 40 to 60% of the downforce on these bikes will be gone in 2027, is what he reckoned. Good!
Good. I would say that's probably right. I mean, it's never really right because the engineers will always claw some back.
Of course.
But one of the things that they're doing is making it a point to make that downforce more draggy as well, which means it's not going to be as worthwhile to get it on the bike. And you're going to have less power to shove it through the air because we're going from liter bikes to 850cc.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing bikes regularly over 210 mph on every track anymore with that smaller displacement. Again, we'll see how that goes, but that's a promising sign for the future that tech chiefs are already saying, no, this is going to be radically different. And less downforce, I think, in the context of the racing is a good thing. No doubt about that in my mind. You know, hopefully we'll be able to actually have bikes race against each other again, rather than having to worry about that 1 second dirty air window that a lot of these bikes are getting themselves into when they're actually trying to race each other.
Andre, I think that this weekend was the most explicit example of that. The front tire was so fragile here, no matter the compound you ran. If you followed anyone too closely, you just destroy it. So in race trim, it was just really friggin' processional.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The sprint was everything great about MotoGP. The race itself was everything wrong with MotoGP at the moment. Another example of what can happen when downforce and ground effect takes over the racing. And it wasn't good, Chief. It wasn't good. There's no getting around that, unfortunately. But that's the way it goes. Then be the brakes sometimes. Some little things to talk about as well in this race that I think is also worth mentioning. Good to see Paul Espargaro back conquering his demons of this place after it very nearly killed him a couple of years ago.
This place.
No, can't imagine why. That the gravel in Portimão is horrendous. It is so big. The amount of stopping power that it has, it wrecks people. I don't know if you saw it, but that crash that Raul Fernandez had on Friday, where the bike follows him all the way to the air fence, I was very nervous watching that. It was at turn one. He's coming in at 210 mph and tucks the front, and the bike goes all the way to the air fence wall. And, you know, Fernandez has a really sore, thankfully nothing broken, but he dislocated his shoulder and it popped back in the same crash, which I think is wild.
Things about MotoGP riders you usually can't say about other sports.
Yeah. Popped his collarbone and then popped it back in again, as you do, in the same crash. He's a gymnast at that point, basically.
Good lord.
You know, he tried to race for it, but too much pain in the shoulder said, you know, let's sit this one out and try and rest up for Valencia, the final round of the championship this weekend. Reminded me a lot of Paul Espargaro's nasty high side from a couple of years ago. Top 10 as well for Paul, which is really, really solid. He still absolutely has a place on this grid, but he openly also said this weekend, my heart's not in it anymore. He hasn't got, you know, I think in his camp, he's had a taste of that sweet, sweet TV money, and now he can't go back.
yeah, that's an easier way to make your money than hurling yourself on a carbon fiber missile at walls.
Said straight up, I'm enjoying the extra time with the family, you know, and he hasn't got the heart to do a full season anymore, which is weird because earlier this year he was adamant he wanted to come back if someone was prepared to take him. Maybe he put feelers out there and the waters weren't as deep as he thought they were. In any case, it looks like Paul is absolutely done as a full-time bike rider now, but he's still a very solid pair of hands in the context of MotoGP. Also, it was a weird one, Cam. The sport, in a weird sort of way, kind of said goodbye to Miguel Oliveira this weekend because, as we now know, he's done in MotoGP for at least for the time being as he heads to BMW next year to take Toprak's old job.
Yeah. And remember the first year post-COVID when we came here and Miggy was on the grid and he was the biggest celebrity you could possibly imagine at the track.
He won his home race there in 2020 during COVID. I distinctly remember the year they came back in 2021, they had to hire extra security to make sure he got into the track safely. He's a megastar in Portugal. Like, I've asked Portuguese fans, like, is he really that popular over there? And my response was, he's second to Cristiano Ronaldo in Portugal. And we all know, if you know your sports, Cristiano Ronaldo is a god in terms of maybe the most famous athlete in the world, pound for pound. Like, it's Ronaldo and then it's him in Portugal. I'm like, well, shit. A bike rider is your second most popular athlete. That is wild. And Portugal is no small country. That is a big European country in its own right. To be second behind only the most famous athlete arguably on earth is something. And it goes to show you what impact he has on his home Grand Prix, because that is wild.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, for me, like, Miggy will just, he continues to be a rider. I just feel like, man, it should have gone better than this in MotoGP. Multiple time race winner. As fast as anybody in the rain. KTM's last race winner, if I recall correctly.
Last dry race winner, I want to say. Technically. No. Stan corrected. I think Brad Binder in Styria still has one more. Was it him or was it Miggy in Indonesia that was more recent? I think it's Miggy's in Indonesia, actually. Now I think about it. That was 22. Binder's was 21. So, yeah, yes. I mean, it was. He's still KTM's most recent Grand Prix winner, which is a weird sentence given how fast the sport moves.
Yeah, given he's been gone from there for so long, it's. I hope World Superbike is kinder to him than MotoGP has been.
I've been Miguel Oliveira's strongest soldier for a decade. I remember in 2015 when he burst onto the scene in Moto3 when he was at Red Bull KTM, and he was 110 points behind Danny Kent in the Moto3 Championship when Kent won his home Grand Prix at Silverstone. He lost the title by 4. Oliveira won 140 out of the last 150 points available. He went on an absolute tear to the point where it spooked Danny Kent into no longer going for wins. I remember Kent played those last two races ultra safe. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna sit here in 12th. I don't care if Mickey wins. I'm just not going to risk anything round here. And absolutely spooked the shit out of Ken. Just came up short. I remember in Moto 2, he went to Red Bull KTM after beating Kent at Leopard. Got to Red Bull, was third 1 year behind, I think it was the Binder and Marquez feud, and then was second, I want to say 2019. He lost out to Pecco by 9 points. Like, and Pecco had
He's a damn good Grand Prix rider.
Runner up in Moto 3, runner up in Moto 2. Five-time MotoGP race winner. That's a damn good career. One of the greatest of the modern age to have not won a world championship by any measure. In fact, he's had one season in the top flight when he was in the top 10. And that is laughable for a guy with five wins.
The troughs were always a lot more painful than the peaks. A lot of that with injury.
So many where he just misses 3-4 rounds at a time when he's hurt. Like this year with the ligament damage and the broken collarbone that he suffered. I remember 22 when he was taken out at Portimao by Marc Marquez when he locked a brake up and he was the crash zone.
It was 23.
Yeah. That was... we thought Miggy had broken his leg for a minute there. Thankfully, it wasn't as severe as that, but... Jeez, man, he still missed significant time. He's had arm pump multiple times. It's just been... He was a damn good KTM factory rider. He went to Aprilia with R&F thinking that was going to bail him out. Didn't work. For some reason, Trackhouse gave Fernandez the shot over him. Understandable. Questionable at the time. I still think it was a questionable decision. So the Trackhouse went with Fernandez over him and then goes to Pramac and gets hurt at the start of the year and never really gels with the Yamaha, and now he's gone. It's such a shame. He's such a talented rider. Just never really worked out. Look, his win in Austria in 21 against Paul Espargaro and Jack Miller is still possibly the greatest race win in overtaking MotoGP history. It's up there with Rossi in 09. That is a classic double up and under. That was a beautiful race winning move. That man can ride a fucking bike. I don't care what you tell me. Weirdly emotional as well. They gave him a whole history of Portugal lesson, big, you know, pirates parade, and Miggy was front and center, you know, hugs from his wife and, you know, his wife and daughter, you know, standing ovation from the other riders on the grid, tears. Shit, I don't think Miggy was prepared for that. It was actually strangely emotional that he got such a poignant send off. That's very F1, and I don't mean that in a bad way this time. It was actually quite warming.
Very ceremonial.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, big pomp and pageantry, and I've got no problem with that. I look. I'm basically half American. I don't mind shit like that. You know, all the Europeans are like, what the fuck? Be. The Europeans watching that go, what the fuck is this shit? And me as the half American, I'm like, this is great. More. I love it. I'm all for that.
Good to know we're good for something over here.
You guys know how to throw a party, if nothing else. You will never skimp on fireworks.
No.
It helps.
No.
Before we get out of here as well, Moto 2 world title pretty much wrapped up as well. Diogo Moreira. It was a strange leading battle seeing him. Colin Vaya? Where the hell have you been all year? Like, what was that? And David Alonso on the podium was his third podium in a row as well. Good for him.
Starting to figure out the bigger bike as well.
Yeah, he's left it too late to win Rookie of the Year because Danny Holgado wrapped that up. I think he was sixth on the day, and he's confirmed that on points. But Alonso's finished the year hot, second, third in his last three races. I think he's starting to get the hang of this. Next year's going to be fun. it's amazing. Besides Ortola, that Moto 3 class of 24 is looking very tasty. Like, Horgado's been excellent, won multiple races this year. Alonso won at Balaton, and now Vaya on the podium in second as well. And Quentin Vaya scares me. He speaks better English than I do. Like, if you saw him post-race...
He definitely speaks it better than I do, then.
Like, you see him post-race, like, you listen to him, you would never guess he was Dutch. It is like he speaks like an East End Londoner. It is terrifying that he's basically an Anglophile. And God, it was a very poignant speech. He dedicated the second to Jose Antonio Rueda, and Noah Detwiler on the way as well, which was very classy.
That right here as well, because more information had come out in the last week that we've had that both of them had to be resuscitated trackside.
We didn't know. Yeah, in a Raiders case.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of quickly wrap that up with a bow, tremendous props to those trackside workers. Those two young men owe them their lives.
They saved two lives that day. No doubt about it.
Absolutely. Ditto with the hospital who took care of them after the fact. Dorna. The fuck?
Riders conscious,
why
yeah?
Were we saying riders conscious 4 minutes after the crash occurred when both of them had clinically died trackside and had to be resuscitated?
I don't normally say this. Someone needs to be fired for that. That is woeful communication. Woeful. Dangerous miscommunication. Quite frankly, completely unacceptable. It's as simple as that. I get it. You want to inform your viewers as quickly as possible. I know enough about people who work in TV to know what that situation is like, and I know it is not easy. Do not. I joke that
I don't
TV want
to be the
money,
person to make that call.
No, and I joke about TV being easy money. The people that are behind the dashboards, those are the ones that have got it a lot harder most of the time. But if you know more than we do, and you feel like you have to tell us something, make sure the information is accurate. Because saying, when we spoke to people, that we're very fortunate on our Discord, we have members that have worked as first aiders, people that have volunteered as marshals, who have been in these scenarios before, by the grace of God. Being reported as conscious does not mean anything. It is far too vague a term to describe someone's medical condition. I say this because when Jules Bianchi had the accident that would sadly later take his life, he was reported as awake and alert. That is not true. That is not, like, that
we,
is...
We know that that was not the case, and...
No.
It took another half a year, but ultimately we lost him from that incident. You don't want to say too much, but you also you don't need to say something that frankly doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And also, just knowing what we know now, that race really should not have gone on. As a Moto 3 race, as an under ticket race for a race weekend.
No.
Had the riders known how bad it actually was, I think that conversation is even more difficult in the moment in Sepang.
If the moment you say these two young men had heart attacks on the track, you don't run that race. For me, it's as simple as that. And they those were two men who were clinically dead and were in very, very bad shape. You do not run that race, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Until you know those two men are, I wouldn't even necessarily say stable, but I would say, until you know more, you don't run that race. It's not fair to the other competitors, knowing that they have to deal with that emotional guilt over their heads and then still race a bike at 150 miles an hour like that shit's normal. No, we can we don't have to do this, is what I would say in response to that. Saddening, maddening that we still have to have these conversations about communication within motorsport, because those horrific crashes are bad enough. It is even worse when the series that is ultimately responsible for relaying key information about their condition can get it so badly wrong, quite frankly. So yeah, hopefully that never, ever happens again. I can only hope that never happens again. And of course, like, the good news out of this is that both Noah and Jose are back in their home countries, in Spain. And
Switzerland, Noah was on camera cracking a smile yesterday.
With his leg in an enormous cut. I do not for the life of me know how that man is smiling with his leg in a cast 2 weeks after an incident where he could have very easily died on track. That is an incredibly tough young man, let me tell you. My goodness. Delighted to say that both of them are back in their home countries, continuing their recoveries. Pereira's now back in Spain. He's had that broken hand operated on. Thankfully, nothing more than that, and the severe concussion that he had as a result of that incident, obviously alongside the horrific cardiac arrest. Thankfully, nothing more in that. And Noah's going to continue his rehabilitation in Switzerland, his home country. Turns out it was an open leg fracture. The reported stories about it were true, in that it was an open leg fracture.
It was an open hand fracture as well.
Oof, Jesus Christ.
Severe, severe injury.
We got very lucky on this one.
We dodged a big old fucking bullet. We really
massively
did.
Massively so.
Again, for those asking, enormous for those credit asking, yeah. To those trackside workers, because they did a job that not everyone can.
No. They saved lives. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. And for those asking about, well, what has this been for Noah's future, because he was leaving the CIP Green Power team at the end of the season. Paolo Simoncelli, one man who could certainly relate to the worst of what can happen to bike racers out there, has already promised that there will be a seat at the SIC 58 team the moment Noah is able to come back. So he hopefully I could say when he makes a full recovery rather than now if. When he makes a full recovery, there will be a seat in Moto3 waiting for him when that happens. And Jose Antonio Herrera, as you probably already know, will be going to Moto2 next year with the Red Bull KTM team alongside Colin Vaya, as mentioned earlier. At least we can end on a positive note this time. MotoGP's season finale. You know when it's not a good time, and on Friday, Matt Burt says, "Welcome to MotoGP's first round 21. And I'm like, I'm tired,
it's just
boss.
A bad taste in the mouth. Also worth noting, if you can find a replay of this past weekend's Moto3 race, for Asato, around everybody at once to take the lead. Pencil it in for the Scotty, Jason. Oh my God.
Incredible pass. Incredible multiple pass to do that. Yeah, that's well worth watching from Max Chiesa's dominant Moto3 win in the end. That's definitely worth a viewing in of itself. As said, MotoGP season finale. Valencia, welcome back after the horrible flooding of last year. Good to see them back. That'll be the final round, round 22 of 22, this weekend. Who gets fourth in the championship? Because Bez pretty much has third wrapped up. On that one. So who gets fourth between Bagnaia and Pedro Acosta? We'll have to wait and see. Formula One, as mentioned, has got a week off. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time there for the first of the final triple header from Las Vegas. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cameron Buckley. Don't forget, Motorsport 101 Awards banner opens up on Friday, November the 14th. Be there, vote early, but please only vote once. Until then, I've been Dre Harris, and he's been Cam Buckley. Thank you very much for watching and listening. We'll take care. Sayonara.
Alternately, stuff the ballot for Alex Palou. He deserves it.
Weren't saying that shit last year.